Good morning. So good to be with you here today, and I want to welcome everyone who is here, especially those who are visiting with us. We hope that you will stay just a little while after services so we can get to know you and encourage you to be with us at every opportunity that you have in the future. I received a phone call this morning early, and it was Doug. And I wouldn't call him frantic. He was pretty well composed, but he was certainly concerned because the pew sheet had him listed as the one speaking this morning, whereas the bulletin had me listed as the one speaking, and he wasn't sure if he had mixed up the dates. And when he called, I was very tempted to act as if I weren't prepared. But seeing that my lesson was about mercy this morning, I thought it inappropriate. I appreciate Doug so much and his good work, and certainly thankful for the opportunity to speak this morning. Suppose you were walking into a restaurant, and at this restaurant, you encounter someone that you're familiar with, maybe someone from work or from school, but you're not real sure about them. You've heard certain things about them, that they have some concern for good and doing right, but you're just not so sure about them. And when you see this person, you begin to notice the crowd with which he is eating. Maybe they are cursing a little bit, or maybe there are some drinks on the table that would be inappropriate for him to drink. Maybe you just get a negative vibe from the crowd that he is with based on the way they are dressed. What is your reaction to that situation? I think a lot of times, maybe, perhaps we would jump to conclusions about this person. Maybe give that person a negative association. Whereas before we were unsure about him, now we have some kind of conclusive evidence that perhaps he is not the person we should be hanging around with. Well, that's kind of the situation in which the Pharisees find themselves in Matthew chapter 9. Notice in Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 10, Jesus is seen here to be reclining at a table, and notice that it says that the tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. It's curious here, even at the front end of this verse, even though it's not particularly related to our sermon this morning, it's so interesting to me to see that these sinners and tax collectors seemingly have sought out Jesus and are coming to him to eat with him. And so we should make the positive assumption, I think, possibly, at least, that they are coming to him for guidance, that they are coming to him for goodness, for he was already known to be a teacher of righteousness and a miracle worker. And so it's interesting to me to see that this crowd approached him and his disciples, and they are eating together. Notice in verse 11, though, that the Pharisees saw this, and when they saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Whatever the situation may have been, whether the Pharisees are here superimposing their own idea about why Jesus was eating with the Pharisee, or rather the sinners and tax collectors, they believe that he should not be doing this. That's the bottom line. They believe that whatever the excuse was, whether they came and found him or whether he sat down with them, he should not be eating with these people. Notice what Jesus says. Verse 12, he says, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick." And then in verse 13, he kind of lowers the boom. He says, "Go learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice." This text is one that we have studied in the college group recently. We have embarked on a new study in our college class about the pointed sayings of Jesus, the sharp sayings of Jesus. And we're drawing attention to the actual phrases that may key us in on important doctrine, important teachings that Jesus wanted to make a special, a particular drawing of attention to by raising his voice, so to speak, with his tone. And this morning, I don't want to focus so much on that tone as I do the actual saying that we are looking at here. Go learn what this means. I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. For I believe that by identifying this as an important text by his tone, then we should also use this as an occasion to learn what exactly he did mean. That is, what did he mean by desiring mercy rather than sacrifice? It's difficult to say how we would react in this situation. It's difficult to place ourselves in the situation that was here accounted for between the Pharisees and Jesus. But in either situation, let us try to learn what this means. This would have been a very offensive saying to the Pharisees because the Pharisees thought they knew it all. They were the ones that were the moral police, so to speak, of the day. And they believed to have all of the things lined up correctly. And so to say that they didn't understand a certain particular Old Testament text was an insult to them. And I don't think any of us would feel that way. I think if Jesus told us to go learn something, we'd do just that. We'd just go learn it. And hopefully that's what I want to do this morning, is go and learn what this means. We'll be doing so by looking at two general points. First of all, Old Testament references. Two verses that kind of parallel this one verse. And then we'll look at New Testament applications and see how this applies to us. Notice, first of all, in the Old Testament that this verse is paralleled in a couple of places. And two such places are Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 3 and Hosea 6 and verse 6. We're going to start out in Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 3. If you'll turn there, you'll notice a proverb that sounds strikingly like this verse that Jesus uses. The book of Proverbs is a collection of wise sayings, mostly written by Solomon, but not all of them are written by Solomon. And here we have an example of one of those proverbs. The nature of a proverb is short and memorable. The purpose of them were to be memorized. They were intended to be memorized, and so they were short and powerful verses. And here we have an example of this. There are so many themes throughout the book of Proverbs. Sometimes you'll see themes such as don't be haughty, don't be proud, watch what you say. But here we find some really strong themes that permeate the book of Proverbs. Notice here, the proverb writer says, to do righteousness and justice is more, notice that word there, very curious, more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. I think if we were to take a poll of what the proper definition of righteousness is here in this congregation, I think we'd all end up close to the same place. I think we would all say it's something like doing what is right, doing what the Lord has commanded to do. Righteousness is seeking to do what is right. I think we'd all land there, and I think that's exactly correct. But if we were to ask what the general definition of justice is in the Old Testament particularly, I think we'd all land in the same place generally, which would be justice, meaning either equality or fairness. But we'd be missing something very important in the theme of Old Testament justice. Because you see, when you read the word justice in the Old Testament, it is often associated, I'd say even predominantly associated, with one central idea, and that is this: helping the helpless. God was wanting to make sure, when he gave out these commandments, that those who could not help themselves were taken care of. Notice several passages throughout the Old Testament. We'll start in Deuteronomy, where it's kind of summed up together. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 18 very quickly. In Deuteronomy 10 and verse 18, we have a plea here for three groups of people: the fatherless, the widows, and the sojourner, that is the foreigner. God was very concerned with justice being carried out for them. These are the three groups you'll see all throughout the book of Deuteronomy as receiving sort of special attention from God, wanting to make sure they were taken care of and that they weren't abused. Deuteronomy 10:18 is one example. If you jumped over to Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 17, you'd see something similar. If you looked at Deuteronomy chapter 27 and verse 17, verse 19, you'd see something also very similar. These verses all indicate that justice is associated with taking care of those who cannot take care of themselves: the widow, the fatherless, and the sojourner, the foreigner. Those are also the three groups that are most likely to be taken advantage of or neglected. And God is very specific about carrying out justice to these people. In fact, when you look into the prophets that were prophesying warnings to Israel or to Judah concerning the coming exile. They were warned about certain things they were doing wrong. And one of those things, one of the major themes you see in the Old Testament prophets about the things they were doing wrong is not doing this. They were not taking care of the fatherless, the widow, and the sojourner. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 17 is such an example. Jeremiah 22:3 is another example. And if you were to look at Ezekiel chapter 22 and verse 7 real quick, really 6 and 7. This is such an excellent example of what I'm talking about here. In Ezekiel chapter 22, I can find Ezekiel. Notice here that he begins by telling them that they are guilty of shedding blood, the leaders in particular, verse 6. Verse 7, father and mother are treated with contempt, and the sojourner suffers extortion in your midst. The fatherless and the widow are wronged in you. Paralleled to, or just as important as fathers and mothers here, God points out through the prophet Ezekiel that their abuse of the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow is just as enraging in his eyes. They carry just as much weight as their own father and mother. Do you see the strength of these passages? This is the justice of God. He was concerned with taking care of those who could not take care of themselves. Now, going back to our passage that we're discussing in the moment, Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 3. To do justice, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. What does that mean? Yes, God is concerned with sacrifice, or else he wouldn't have commanded it. Yes, he is concerned with the way things happen in sacrifice, but he is more concerned with righteousness and justice. If you were doing these things, if you were doing the sacrifices and going through all the measures of the law correctly, but you were missing the point of not being merciful and not carrying out justice and righteousness, then you were doing it wrong, essentially. He is more concerned with righteousness and justice than he was the sacrifices. We see this time and time again. Jump over now to Hosea chapter 6 and verse 6. We see a very similar passage. Now we're in a prophet, or reading from a prophet, one of those prophets we mentioned that was a pre-exilic prophet, if you will, a prophet that was prophesying before they went to exile. And as they were living their lives, separating themselves from God further and further, one of the identifying marks of their apostasy was that they were not being loving. They were not having mercy on others. In fact, the book of Hosea starts out in Hosea chapter 1. I lose the verse, but right there in Hosea chapter 1, the Bible mentions that God calls Hosea to take a harlot as a wife, whose name is Gomer. And when she produced the first child, that first child should be called No Mercy. That's very specific. He is not going to have any more mercy on the children of Israel because they are not showing mercy to others. And that's the bottom line. That's one of the major themes of the book of Hosea. And here we find in chapter 6 and verse 6 that God says, I desire steadfast love, not sacrifice. Jesus is actually quoting from this verse, but the Septuagint reads, that is the Greek version of the Old Testament that was in popular circulation right around the time of Jesus. It was kind of the new version of the day. Jesus quotes that version, which does say mercy there instead of steadfast love. So I desire mercy instead of sacrifice. I think the Septuagint translators took the major theme of Hosea, which is mercy or no mercy, that is from the Lord, and applied it here to this verse in this translation. Either way, whether you translate this love or you translate this mercy, the idea is very similar. Showing love to God is showing love to your fellow man. Showing mercy to your fellow man is showing love to God. That is to be desired more than sacrifice. Here again, we see the same plea. these are not ideas that are just happen to be here in the text. These are long-lasting foundational principles that you see even at the beginning of the Jewish faith. Turn back to Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19. In Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19, you have a verse where God is talking about Abraham, and he is saying that he has chosen Abraham because he wants him to teach his children and the generations after him about the way of the Lord. But notice here how he defines the way of the Lord: through righteousness and justice. Curious that those two things are the foundational principle for the faith that will identify Abraham and therefore the whole Jewish nation. Righteousness and justice. Being careful to do what is right, but doing it in such a way that you do not harm your fellow man and that you make sure to take care of those who can't take care of themselves. Those are the foundational principles of Israel. You see them all throughout the Old Testament, even up to the prophets. If you were to summarize it, I would say that God is not unconcerned with sacrifice, but he is more concerned with mercy. Now let's look to the New Testament now and try to make some application here. Jumping back to Matthew chapter 9, verses 10 through 13, here in this situation where the Pharisees have come upon Jesus eating with sinners and tax collectors, and they make the worst of it. They judge him as someone who is unfit to be a Messiah. And they are accusing him of being someone who should not be teaching righteousness by the very company that he keeps. And just as a side note here, young people, this is not an excuse to go out and be with people that you should not be with. 1 Corinthians 15:33 still stands strongly. You should not have bad company, because bad company corrupts good morals. But we should not assume the worst about people when we come upon this situation as is presented here in the text. Jesus, instead of defending himself, instead of saying, well, these people came and sat with me, they just wanted to receive some teaching, and that's what I was doing. Instead of explaining the situation or trying to make peace with the Pharisees, he directly addresses the problem at hand. And the problem is this: they were not showing mercy. Bottom line, they did not have the humility in place in order to look at the situation and have mercy on it instead of making judgment. That's what happened. And that's what Jesus is teaching him. I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. Well, that's well and good. But what does that mean to me? What does that mean to us? Very quickly, I want to share three points with you that I think we can take away from this teaching of Jesus. We can go and learn what this means, which is, by the way, the title of this for the people in the crow's nest when you're titling this. Go learn what this means. I think we can go and learn what this means by doing these three things. We need to, first of all, pay more attention to mercy and give it more attention. To be careful to not be those who would jump into a situation, jump to conclusions, make false judgments without applying mercy first, without trying to show justice and righteousness. And in a very general way, I think we should take that lesson and make it our own, to look at the situations in our day-to-day life, look at the way we approach certain things, and do our best to approach them with a loving attitude, with that of mercy and kindness. Second, I think we need to recognize the real, true responsibilities we have in this nation and as Americans. If we were to take a poll, if I were to ask you, let me stop there. If I were to ask you to take out everything you have in your pockets and assess how much money you had on your person, including the worth of your clothes right now, what would that look like? How much would you have? If I were to empty my pockets, I actually don't have anything in my pockets right now. It's all right there. But I have a wallet. It has a safety credit card that has a fair amount of money on it if I needed to use it. I have a debit card that has a significant amount less than that available to me. I would have a little bit of cash, maybe. I have this nice watch that was given to me as a gift that's worth a little bit. The clothes on my body may be worth about $100. I would estimate that every adult in this audience is on their person carrying anywhere from $500 to $1,000 on average. I think that'd be a fair shot. And brethren, that's enough to feed a family in Africa, Latin America, Haiti, for a whole year that we are wearing on our body in this moment. Now, I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. Let me be very clear. I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty, nor am I trying to pull on the emotional heartstrings of anyone in this audience. What I'm trying to do is make us aware of the wealth that we have in this nation. We are a wealthy nation, comparatively speaking to others. And therefore, to whom much is given, much is required, right? That's what Luke says. We are charged with the great responsibility of making sure that we carry out the principles of righteousness and justice to all that we have the opportunity to do so. We need to be aware of our responsibility. In the third place, I think we need to excel still more. There is no doubt in my mind that Dalrada as a congregation is a very generous congregation. I am so joyful and proud to be a part of a congregation that gives so much so generously to mission efforts, that gives so much so generously to local community efforts. We do a great job. There's no doubt about that at all. But we can do better, right? I think of our reputation. When you think about the Salvation Army, which, by the way, is an actual church organization that has beliefs and fellowships and all the whole works. When you think of the Salvation Army, what's the first thing you think of? What are they known for? They are known for taking care of those who cannot take care of themselves, by and large. If you were to ask anybody in the community what they are known for, they are known for taking care of people. If someone were to assess what we're known for, it might look a little different. It may be that it's not bad, and I don't think it is bad. What we're known for is being a Bible-based church. What we're known for is trying to do what God says, and that's a great reputation. But we should tweak it. We should be the ones known for mercy. We should be the ones known for taking care of those who can't take care of themselves. And though we are generous, oh so generous, I think the words of Paul to the Thessalonians would be applicable here. Notice in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, Paul says this to the Thessalonians. Concerning brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write you, for you yourselves have learned of God to love one another. And indeed, you are doing so throughout all of Macedonia. But we urge you to excel still more. With the wealth of this nation and the wealth of individuals here in this congregation, we can do a whole lot of good. And it's not necessarily just monetary wealth. That's not what I'm talking about. We can share the good attitudes and the blessings that we have in Christ with so much for the ultimate glory of God. By doing this, by being merciful, by desiring mercy rather than sacrifice, so to speak, we can show a community the true attributes of God and lead them to a salvation in Christ Jesus. Go learn what this means is such a powerful phrase when we consider what it is we're supposed to learn. I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. All throughout the Old Testament, we see consistently that mercy is associated with righteousness and justice is associated with taking care of those who can't take care of themselves. Righteousness being associated with just doing right, trying to do what we can to follow the Lord in all his ways. In the New Testament, when Jesus brings this up, he is trying to show that there are things that are important, which are sacrifices in the Old Testament. I would say for us, it would be things more like worship and things of that nature. And those are important things. We don't need to overlook them. None of these things are to be overlooked. But there are things that are more important. Mercy, righteousness, and justice. Let us strive to excel still more. It may be the case that you're here today and you have not obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can join the church in our effort to glorify God by showing mercy, love, and righteousness, by taking him on in baptism today, having your sins washed away, and starting your life as a Christian. It may be the case you've already done these things, you've already been baptized, but you've stepped away from the fold. Your mercy has been lacking, and it has led you to do things that you are not proud of, that you wish to ask for forgiveness from the congregation, or just the prayers for strength. If you have any need at all,